This song written by Townes Van Zandt in 1968. He's got some amazing songs. His lyrics are great. His melody lines are simple and kind of repetitive, as are his chords, but those grow as you get more familiar with a song. But his lyrics, wow. This one is really weird. It's about a nightmare, I think. It's about a nightmare that I've either had or I should have had, because I really feel like I have had it. My lover comes to me with a rose on her bosom. The moon's dancing purple all through her black hair. And a lady's in waiting, she'll stand by the window, and the sun will rise soon on the false and the fair. Sing to a lorelei. She tells me she comes from my mother, the mountain. Her skin fits her tightly, her lips do not lie. She silently slips from her throat a medallion. Slowly she twirls it in front of my eyes. Sing to a lorelei. I watch her, I love her, I long for to touch her. The satin she's wearing is shimmering blue. Outside my window, her ladies are sleeping. The dog's gone a-hunting, their howling is through. Sing to a lorelei. So I reach for her hand, and her eyes turn to poison. Her hair turns to splinters, her flesh turns to brine. She leaps across the room and she stands in the window and screams at my firstborn will surely be blind. Sing to a lorelei. Then she throws herself out to the black of the nightfall. She's parted her lips, but she makes not a sound. I fly down the stairway and I run to the garden. No trace of my true love is there to be found. Sing to a lorelei. So walk these hills lightly and watch who you're loving. By Mother the Mountain, I swear that it's true. And love not a woman with hair black as midnight and a dress made of satin all shimmering blue. Sing to a lorelei. Sing to the lorelei. Yeah, my lover comes to me with a rose on her bosom. The moon's dancing purple through her raven hair. And a lady's in waiting, she'll stand neath my window. And the sun will rise soon on the false and the fair.
This is Nothing But Feedback. I'm Amanda Melly, and we have Eric Snake Gulikson with us today. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm very excited. We just saw you do Our Mother the Mountain by Townes Van Zandt.
Townes Van Zandt, yep.
And you said this was 1968?
1968, yeah.
Could you tell us why you picked this song?
Well, it's weird. I like dark songs. And he's got such fantastic lyrics. You know, if you really listen to him, he's got a lot of really good songs. He also got some pretty lame ones, but so does everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, his melodies are simple and repetitive, as are his chord patterns. They can grow as you learn a song. I've only been working on this one for a few days.
Mm.
But the lyrics, his lyrics are great, at least in many of the songs. Most of you know Pancho and Lefty, he wrote that. He wrote a thing called Tecumseh Valley, which I do. Another one called Sad Cinderella, which I do. And they just speak to me. I'm all about the lyrics in a song. If the lyric doesn't speak to me, I won't do the song. And when I do a song, I like to give myself to the song and just, you know, let the universe perform. I'm just a channel. But I look for these lyrics that do speak to me. This one does.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange. It's I believe it's about a nightmare.
Okay.
I've never stated anywhere that it is, but I feel it's about a nightmare because I think I've had the nightmare. And if I haven't had the nightmare, I feel so strongly that I have that I probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really weird song, and I love it. I've just been working on it, as I say, for a few days.
Wow. So what got you into music?
What got me into music?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. Well, I always like to listen,
mm-hmm.
okay? But I was not really into playing anything. My mother last, she was a piano teacher, and she said when I was really little, she was trying to get me accustomed to music, so she'd sit me in her lap while she played the piano, and she said all I did was cry.
Aww.
So then when I was in my early teens, my folks had me take piano lessons from somebody else because my mother wasn't getting anywhere. The teacher threw me out after 2 years and said I'd never make a musician.
Oh my gosh.
And then I went to a rock and roll show down in New Jersey. We were down there for the couple weeks in the summertime. I got my father to take me to one put on by WNJR in Newark. Put on in Paterson, New Jersey. We went, and the headliner was Chuck Berry. And when I saw him play that guitar, man, I said, I have got to learn how to do that. I never did learn how to duck walk, but and I can't play guitar like he did,
mm-hmm.
but you know it's got me into music. One of my greatest kicks was 1968-69, being on the same TV show with him and hanging out with him in the dressing room. That was cool.
What was he like?
Oh, he very humble guy.
Oh.
Really nice. And you'd run into him in an airport, and you'd recognize people. Wouldn't know who it was, but he'd recognize me and say hello. It was just cool.
It's very cool. Oh my goodness.
I started playing guitar. I remember when I wanted to put a pickup on it and get an amplifier. My father didn't like that idea at all. Let you do that, next thing you know, you're going to want to run away and join a jazz band. Well, I ended up not quite doing that. I finished college first before I got into Orpheus. We took off on our national tours.
Wow. So Can you tell me about Orpheus, please?
Well, Orpheus had three charted albums and two charted singles in the first incarnation, which is where I was. I was one of the founding members. I was a bassist. We were in MGM Records. Our biggest hit was one that they called, it was called Can't Find the Time to Tell You, which some of your audience will remember. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Nice.
I just recently recorded it again. I've changed it a lot.
Does it still have ba-da-da-da-da-da-da?
Well, you know, it was a pop song. It was a good, mm-hmm. You know, it's what it was.
Yeah.
Two of the guys, Jack McInnes and Bruce Arnold, mm-hmm. had played together in a folk duo called The Villagers for a couple of years. Before that, Jack and I had been in a folk trio. Mm-hmm. We did Kingston Trio type stuff, you know. I played the upright bass. And that broke up. I went into rock and roll with a trio that was extremely popular in central New England called the Blue Echoes. Got a few records, got picked up by National. But that group broke up, and Jack was off with Bruce doing the duo. And they got a chance to audition for a producer in New York named Wes Farrell, who produced, among others, The Cowsills, Brooklyn Bridge, several others. Mm. This is all way before you were born.
Oh, I'm gonna look it all up now.
they called me up and asked if I wanted to sit in, because they were told they needed bass and drums. So I went over, and it worked together beautifully. I remember Bruce saying, "Wow, we can play rock and roll." In the first practice. And we hunted around, found a drummer, and went down and auditioned. And Wes Farrell said, "Well, we need a few more songs here to do an album, so you got to put together a few more." So we went home, and on the way we thought of the name Orpheus, who was the Greek god, well, he's a demigod, actually, of music. He brought music to mankind. Mm-hmm. So we thought that was cool.
It is.
The drummer, Harry Sandler, knew a fellow in Boston named Brian Interland, who was the general manager of the Surf Ballrooms. There used to be three of those, one in Hyannis, one in Salisbury, and one in Nantasket. And he said, "Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Make yourself a demo tape. Go to New York, shop it around, so I'll give you some names." So we made a demo tape at Emerson in Boston. Mm-hmm. Went down to New York, we knocked on some doors, and we knocked on 11 doors and got 8 contract offers.
Can I high five you? Come here.
So there we were. Now we had 9
oh my goodness.
Offers to record, and we ended up going with Alan Lorber, who was the guy behind what they called then the Boston Sound. Mm-hmm. That was a marketing idea that just ran amok, as he said, because MGM hopped all over it and put out ads, the sound heard around the world, yada, yada, yada. And all kinds of other labels went into Boston and started signing up people. On MGM, there was ourselves, Ultimate Spinach, and the Beacon Street Union, but there were many others that got signed, some of them quite good. But the thing is, there was no Boston Sound. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of groups. None of us sounded the same. So, if they'd added an S to Sounds, made it Sounds, it might have worked. But, the Rolling Stone and other magazines, they panned things. They're all different. That's no sound like Memphis Sound or Detroit Sound or Nashville Sound.
Right.
So it got panned, which was too bad, because there was a lot of good talent that... just got dissed,
Wow.
But we did pretty good. We, as I say, we had 3 charted albums, 2 charted singles. Can't Find the Time was a decent-sized hit, and we got to travel around for a couple of years.
Right.
Played with a lot of cool people.
Oh, Oh my goodness.
Played with Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Janis Joplin,
Woo-hoo.
Cream, The Who, Jeff Beck. Played with Jeff Beck at the Schaefer Music Festival in Central Park in New York. It was a really, really interesting ride.
That's amazing. I'm gonna have to come back to that. We're gonna have you do another song, and then oh my goodness. The song you're about to do for us is "Since I Fell for You," mm-hmm. by Buddy Johnson,
1945.
The song from 1945 was written by a fellow named Buddy Johnson. He recorded it with his big band and his sister Ella singing lead. It was a moderate hit on what they then called the Race Records chart, which was the forerunner to the rhythm and blues charts. It was done again by Art Hickman in 47 with Annie Laurie singing lead. Again, it hit the Race Records chart, but not the pop charts. Went mainstream in 1963 when it was done by Lenny Welch. Since then, there have been hundreds of recordings. I have two favorite versions. One is by Barbra Streisand from her 1972 album, Barbra Jones Streisand. The other one is mine. I've just recorded it too. When you just give love and never get love, you better let love depart. I know it's so, yet I know can't get you out of my heart. Made me leave my happy home. You took my love, now you're gone. Since I fell for you, now love just brings misery and pain. I know I'll never be the same. Since I fell for you, well, it's too bad and it's too sad, but I'm in love with you. First you love me, then you snub me. But what can I do? I'm still in love with you now. Guess I'll never see the light. I get the blues most every night. Since I fell for you, well, it's too bad. You know it's too sad. But I'm in love with you. First you love me, you love me, then you snub me. But what can I do? I'm still in love with you now. Guess I'll never see the light. I get the blues most every night. Since I fell for you, since I fell,
Hi. Fancy meeting you here.
Fancy meeting. So you just did Since I Fell For You. Good job, first of all.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And of course, I have to ask why you picked that song also.
And just because it's such a beautiful song. It's one of my very favorites, you know. I was not wild about the mainstream one that was done by Lenny Welch in 63, but I loved Barbara Streisand's 1972 version. And there have been a bunch of them since. I've just recorded it myself recently. It's not done yet, but it'll be out soon.
Yeah, I felt that one also. That one kind of grabbed my heart a bit. And I think I felt you, you know, because you said that it meant so much to you. Well, I could feel it in the room.
Well, that's what I say. You know, it's not really me. It's the universe speaking through me.
Yeah, I felt it. So, oh my goodness. Anyway, it's you know, there's so many love songs, but you know, I think we get so desensitized. But that one really grabbed me.
Thanks.
So, yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. So, was there something about riding on a magic bus?
Yeah.
Did you do that?
Well, now, let me explain a little bit here. The Who in England, mm-hmm. they had a school bus that they had, you know, painted up and all that stuff. And that's where they traveled. And that was the actual magic bus.
Okay.
So we didn't ride on that one. But when they were touring the States, mm-hmm. they had a Greyhound. They'd rip out, you know, the whole back section was they built bunks in there.
Ooh.
And we got to ride on that.
That's awesome.
Mainly because we played with them several times. Mm-hmm. And we were playing in Constitution Hall in Washington. And I had ridden down in our truck just because I liked to ride in the truck. The other guys had driven down mm-hmm. or flown down, like maybe they flew down. But we got to ride back to New York on their bus, which was cool. mainly on, I think, because Harry was able to score some weed.
That is.
But anyway,
we
got a ride back to New York and
wow.
with them, and
it was
hung
fun.
Out for a while. Yeah, so they became not close friends, but yeah. you know, they invite us over to a party and stuff like that. You know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this was, you know, back when Keith Moon was still alive. He was a strange dude.
Yeah.
He was really funny. We were over to party in their hotel, and he says, "Psst, Snake, come with me." Okay, so I follow him down the hall. He had a suite into his bedroom. He pulls out this steamer trunk from under his bed, opens it up, and it's crammed chock-a-block full of porno magazines. "Me wife likes this stuff," he says. I said, "You're right."
Nice.
He was funny.
It is hilarious. That's awesome. Oh my God. I love it. If you were to give advice to somebody that wanted to kind of do music as their career or really focus on it, what would you tell them starting out?
Well, you got to learn some basics. You know, there's no doubt about that. You can't just, well, you can just sort of go out and play even if you don't know anything. That, you know, I know some people who've done that. But you should learn some basics so you can learn some songs, but don't be afraid to go out and play them in front of people, because that's the way they improve. You're challenged, you're continually pushed, you know, to get better. If you're just playing in your living room, you're not going to get better. You know, you're going to just be at a living room level. So get out and play in front of people as much as you can. Now, I didn't do this, you know, for my whole life, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the past several years, I'm 75 now. I'm somewhere every single night.
Wow. Yeah,
if I'm physically able to do so.
Wow.
A gig, recording session, band practice, or an open mic. Mm-hmm. I cover, you know, most of eastern Massachusetts, southern New Hampshire, northern Rhode Island, northeast Connecticut, mm-hmm. and put on 600 miles a week, and it's a blast.
And you love it.
I love it.
Oh my goodness.
But that's the thing. Get mm-hmm. out and do it.
Right.
And you'll meet other people who are going to tell you ways you can improve. You'll see other people. When I go to an open mic, I watch the people who are playing. And I make little notes on my phone. If they do a song that I really like, that speaks to me, I'll note it down on my phone. Mm-hmm. And if I see them do some kind of a chord that I don't know, I'll put that in my phone too. And I'll wow. learn that chord for later and fit it in somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're never at a point where you stop learning.
Wow.
And that's one of the cool things.
Right.
That you always find new things. Mm. Love music.
Oh, my goodness. So now we're going to go back to 1876, mm-hmm. and we're going to watch you do My Grandfather's Clock. And this is by Henry Clay Work.
Yep.
My grandfather's clock was too tall for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, though it weighed not a penny weight more. It was bought on the morn of the day that he was born, and 'twas always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, his life's seconds numbering. Stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. In watching its pendulum swing to and fro, many hours he had spent as a boy. In childhood and manhood the clock seemed to know, and to share in his grief and his joy. It struck 24 when he entered at the door with a blooming and beautiful bride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, his life's seconds numbering. It stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. My grandfather said that of those he could hire, not a servant so faithful he'd find. For it wasted no time and had but one desire, at the close of each week to be wound. And it kept in its place, not a frown upon its face, and its hands never hung by its side. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, is life's seconds number in. It stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. It rang an alarm in the dead of the night, an alarm that for years had been dumb. Knew that his spirit was pluming for flight, that his hour of departure had come. So the clock kept the time with a soft and muffled chime, while we silently stood by his side. And it stopped short, never to go again, when without slumbering is life's seconds numbering. It stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. It stopped short, never to go again, when the old man.
Yeah, that one. My grandfather's clock. I feel like I almost could tell that it was so, like it was, you can almost tell the era, not the era, but the how old a song is, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I said, you know, as I have said, my father used to sing it to me when I was a little kid, and his father sang it to him when he was a little kid, and it goes back, you know, generations. And many of the people who will be watching this show will very likely remember their parents singing the song to them when they were young.
Wow.
Interesting, kind of strange little story. A woman told me at an open mic that she knew of another woman who ran a pre-K school, and they were having Grandparents' Day. So she taught them all to sing this song, and they came and the kids sang the song, and while they were singing, she realized most of these people were approaching 90 very rapidly, and that's when the clock stopped. So she said, well, maybe that wasn't the right choice.
Oh my goodness.
Never would have occurred to me either.
Oh no! Oh my goodness! Oh. Well, that's dark, huh?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Reminds me, my parents were in a retirement village in central Connecticut. My dad had passed on, my mother had an apartment. When she passed on, she had a baby grand piano, so my daughter wanted to have it. So she hired a piano mover, and the piano mover, I'm not quite sure the name of it, I don't remember. I think it was Grave Diggers. They had a big black truck, and it had skeletons and things painted on the outside.
Oh my!
And they had Grave Diggers T-shirts. And they went to the retirement village to find out where the piano was, walked up to the main desk with all these other retirees sitting around and said, hi, we're the Grave Diggers.
Oh!
And everybody went, ah.
God. Oh my God. Snake.
You can tell I have a dark sense of humor.
You have a very dark and dry sense of humor, which I very much appreciate. It's my favorite. So, oh, I have to catch myself for that one. So could you just tell us about, because the next song you're going to be performing is A Hard Rain's A Gonna Fall by Bob Dylan. I've seen you perform this before. It strikes the whole room. And could you tell us why you picked that song from Bob Dylan, 1962, you said, and what you've kind of done with it?
Yeah, in In 1962, we had, you know, a lot of serious world problems. And if, for those of your audience who were around in 1962, that probably do remember if they were old enough, that, you know, we were on the edge of a world war, a nuclear war. And this song is about nuclear fallout. That's the hard rain. A young person asked me at an open mic after I did it and didn't explain that. She said, Bob Dylan wrote a song about climate change back in 1962?
Oh, wow.
Well, actually, it almost could be. You know, I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning, heard the roar of a wave that could drown the world. Yeah, it almost could be. But it's apocalyptic anyway.
Right.
They had a special thing at Amazing Things in Framingham at the end of April. It was called The Art of the Protest Song. Mm-hmm. And I usually do that song that I played for you guys, you know, the N-word.
Sounds good. That was tricky.
But I knew that Wanda, the girl who wrote it, was going to be there, and I knew she was going to do it.
Of course.
She does. She has some great songs. Wow. But anyway, so I had to find something else.
Yeah.
So I went on YouTube and downloaded a whole raft of protest songs. I had a playlist, you know. And I started going through them, and I hit Hard Rain. Well, that was the first Dylan song that I remember. You know, that's the one that introduced me to him. I say, oh, yeah, that's the one. I got to do that. It's really long. It's 53 lines of lyrics, so I cut it down to 38. Mm-hmm. Because 53 lines is too long for an open mic, you know, that doesn't quite make it. Mm-hmm. And I performed it that way at the Art of the Protest Song and for, you know, a couple of weeks afterwards. And I was going to an open mic in Fitzwilliam, New Hampshire at the Fitzwilliam Inn, which is a great open mic on Wednesdays. And as I pulled into the parking lot, now, bear in mind, I hadn't consumed anything or smoked any dingweed or any of that stuff.
Okay.
So I pulled into the parking lot and into the parking place, and a voice literally said in my head, you need to add these two lines to that song. And when I stopped the car, there they were, black type on a yellow background. I read them and I said, yeah, they need to be in that song. And I didn't have to memorize them because they were already programmed. And I've been doing it that way ever since. The two lines,
please.
They come at the end of the second verse after the guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And they are, I saw bombs and missiles controlled by a madman. Mm. And I saw traitors and thieves in the houses of Congress. Mm-hmm. And if those two lines don't fit today.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to be there. That was the and when the universe tells you something that clearly and that plainly, you better do it.
You better do it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's the way I've been doing it ever since.
You know, when I saw you at the open mic do this song for the first time, those are the lines that grabbed me. Wow. So thank you for being on this show.
No, it certainly is my pleasure.
It's my pleasure as well. Thank you. Oh my goodness.
Call me anytime.
We're going to have him back. So we're going to watch a snake do A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. A Gonna Fall. Written by Bob Dylan. So we're going to wait.
Where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of six misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on six crooked highways. I stood out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles to the mouth of a graveyard, and it's a hard. Well, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. And what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? Saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. I saw bombs and missiles controlled by a madman. I saw traitors and thieves in the houses of Congress. And it's hard. It's a hard. It's a hard. It's a hard. Well, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. And what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard one person starve. I heard many people laughing. And it's hard. It's a hard. It's a hard. Yeah, it's a hard. Well, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. And who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young girl beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. Well, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out before the rain starts a-falling. Gonna walk to the depths of the deepest black forest, where the people are few and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are clogging their waters, and the executioner's face is always well hidden. And I'll tell it and sing it and think it and breathe it. I'll shout from the mountains, so all souls can hear it, that it's a heart, it's a heart, it's a heart, yes, it's a heart. Well, it's a hard rain. That's gonna fall.